This podcast is brought to you by Julius Meinl Coffee. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Hello, I'm your host, Louise Taffer, and joining me here in the studio is Nick Debano. Good evening to you, Nick.
Good evening, Louise.
How you going?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Been a big weekend of football and looking forward to the next that's coming up in the next few days.
Yes, there is plenty of action coming up because while domestic competition concludes, the international stage starts to heat up, especially with the FIFA Women's World Cup around the corner.
Yeah, it sure does. Women's World Cup in about 2.5 weeks' time. Copa America kicking off very soon, as is the AFCON. So a lot of football to be
Nations
played
Nations League
still.
As well.
Nations League. So a lot of international football to keep our appetites wet and all ready to go.
Of course, there's one more other thing that's heating up tomorrow. Do you know what that is?
What's that?
The under-20 FIFA World Cup in
Poland. All games, I believe, broadcasted live on SBS as well, so can't miss a minute of it, Louise. I'm sure you'll be all over that.
I will be. I won't be missing a minute, that's for sure. And hopefully it's reasonable hours as well. But then again, we're used to getting up at 2, 3, 4 o'clock anyway.
Yeah, well, it is obviously in Poland, so can't expect the best time slots for us. That's the unfortunate, you know, circumstance of being obviously in Australia, having to watch a lot of the European football and having to wake up at all hours to watch games. But at the end of the day, we're used to, as you did say, we can't really complain too much as long as we've got an opportunity to take it all in. I want to talk about some big news coming out of Italy to start off the show, Louise. And the big thing has been that we've heard that Juventus are closing in on a new manager. Now, Massimiliano Allegri is moving away after 4 years as head coach of Juventus. He's won plenty of Scudetti, gotten his team close to winning a Champions League, but hasn't been able to get the job done just yet. Obviously, a former AC Milan boss as well. There's five names that have been linked now to the Juventus job. Firstly, the former Juventus boss, Antonio Conte, spent a season out of the game after coaching at Chelsea. Maurizio Sarri, well, he's potentially on his way back. Obviously, Frank Lampard rumoured to be taking over Chelsea, so that means a potential chance for Sarri to move back to Italy after coaching Napoli. Pep Guardiola is the big one as well, because we do know that there's big rumours linking him. I believe that there was actually a Juventus official that was seen leaving his hotel in Milan this morning, and it'd be interesting to see whether he goes back or makes the move to Italy after conquering Spain and England. And then the other ones as well include Simone Inzaghi from Lazio and the special one, Jose Mourinho.
Yes, and I actually read an article yesterday where it was saying that Cristiano Ronaldo actually would like to see Jose Mourinho back coaching him.
You know, I'm not totally against Mourinho coaching at Juventus.
I think a lot of people obviously still associate Jose Mourinho with Manchester United, so maybe that might be a turnoff for some people, yeah, but it certainly isn't for arguably the world's best player.
Well, I think Mourinho, obviously, yeah, his tactics have been very controversial, but we must remember back at what he did at Inter all those years ago. I know football has changed a lot since he was the manager, but I think that potentially Pep Guardiola going to Juventus could be something quite big. I reckon that it could very well happen because he's done everything that you have to do in England without winning a Champions League. He had two fantastic back-to-back seasons as head coach of Manchester City. He's conquered Spain. He's conquered England. Why can't he conquer Italy next? And I know that at Juventus, he'd probably have a really good chance of getting that Champions League victory, which he did get at Barcelona, but would love to get at the next club. I'm looking at the comments right now. A lot of people saying Pep to Juve, Mourinho to Inter. Now, Mourinho returning back to Inter is a fairy tale for some Inter fans who would like to see him potentially make that return. And Inter obviously potentially could be without a new boss, with Luciano Spalletti apparently on the way out and very well could be under a lot of pressure if they don't get to the Champions League this weekend. And we'll talk a little bit about the top four race a little bit later. But I'm going to go on a limb and I'm going to say Pep Guardiola is going to potentially take over. But I have a feeling that Maurizio Sarri is the one guy that will more than likely get there. That is the big question, because I think he's accustomed to what, you know, Italian game. Obviously, a very good job at Napoli without winning a Serie A. But whether he takes over is a whole other question. But I think Maurizio Sarri, with Frank Lampard going to Chelsea, could find himself potentially at Juventus next season.
A little bit of movement going around, as predicted. It's that time of the season. Yeah. Everyone's starting to change. And I think maybe it's really quite interesting with Pep Guardiola. Obviously, yeah, Manchester City fell short this season in the UEFA Champions League. They did wrap up the domestic treble, something which they're very, very proud of because they haven't done that before. But there's also some other news that has surfaced over the past 2 weeks, and that is surrounding the club's potential ban from the UEFA Champions League.
Of course, yeah.
Could that also be a factor as to why maybe Pep Guardiola wants to step away and take up a potential new post at Juventus?
It's a massive part, because that's the one thing he'd want to achieve. As I did say, I also forgot to mention what he's done for Bayern Munich and Germany. So the three big leagues throughout all of Europe, he's conquered each every one. But if he can't do it at Man City next season, then maybe that will be that turn off and he might say, all right, well, maybe it's time for a new challenge. Maybe it's time for me to go to Serie A and potentially try and, you know, do something over there, because the Italian team is going to try and bridge the gap a little bit with Juventus in the offseason. I wouldn't be surprised. There's a lot of spending from your Milans, your Romas and your Inters, who have that heavy investment coming in over the next few months. But the big question remains is, can Juventus, who every season are tipped to win Serie A, but it's getting to a point now where you can win as many Serie A as you want, but if you can't get it done in the Champions League, that's the big question. With Aaron Ramsey coming in next year, he'll add pretty decent depth to their team. They'll more than likely go out and probably get themselves maybe another striker or a centre-back as well, which I think they need a bolster. I reckon this team could very well win the Champions League, and they will be so disappointed they're not there playing in 2 weeks' time, because this last month has been cruise control for them. They're done. They've got nothing else to play for. They didn't make a Coppa Italia final. The Serie A has been wrapped up for weeks. I watched their game on Monday morning, and they were happy with just seeing the game out, taking the 1-1 draw with Atalanta and celebrating the great career of Andrea Barzagli and the Serie A title as well with it. I just think that if Pep Guardiola comes, it could potentially reinvigorate Juventus and could make him go that next step, because they've got the squad, but the manager's always been the question. They got so close with Allegri and Conte, but Guardiola could take him just that one step further.
Well, I think that if that's the case, it would be fascinating to see, because as you say, Juventus need that success in Europe, something like Manchester City. They need that as well. And it comes back to, how do they get that done? We saw that Ronaldo moved there at the start of the season. Everyone was saying that now is the time for him to take out the UCL with Juventus. But I didn't personally think that they would take it out in their first season with him at the club.
I thought they would, to be honest, Louise. I thought they were at least going to be in the final. But I think that they would be so disappointed, considering how the draw opened up after Real Madrid went out as well. Now, they got to the quarters and fell against Ajax. That, for me, is a big disappointment. So I honestly think that once Juventus just get that manager in and potentially get those few little positional players in terms of depth, like your Ramsey's and potentially another striker and a centre-back
as
well.
What happens with Dybala? He's on his way out.
I am worried for Paulo Dybala, because I feel like with Ronaldo coming in, he's sort of been pushed aside, which I think is really unfortunate. They haven't found a way to have Dybala and Ronaldo in the same starting lineup working cohesively. We've seen him sort of take a backward step. Not what we would say a backward step. He's had to take a back seat to Ronaldo. He's been forced to play out wide, not in his natural role. When he's playing in as number 10 and he's playing in behind the strike, we've seen him at his best. And we'll probably see a lot of that in the Copa America for Argentina, which we'll also talk about a little bit later, because they did announce their Copa America squad. So it's just a matter now of what happens, because if Dybala wants to sit back and potentially try and get this working with Ronaldo, or would he look to potentially make a move somewhere else where he can be the guy? He can go to a team like potentially Manchester United, who prepared to offer big bucks, go to maybe another Italian club, or go to Spain, might join Real Madrid or wherever it might be, and become the main man there. Would Paulo Dybala do that? That's the big question. Or would you stay at Juventus, play alongside Cristiano Ronaldo, have another preseason alongside him, and potentially get that working, which I think is a very scary prospect?
Well, it depends what he wants to achieve. If he wants to be playing week in, week out and starting, he needs to move. It's quite simple. Because we've seen that they don't play in the same squad together.
Yeah, and look, I think that there will be one of those players that have to leave Juventus. Not necessarily have to, but I think that one will want to leave. If it's Paulo Dybala or, unfortunately, Moise Keane. Because Moise Keane could be that.
That's interesting, because he's been starring for them whenever he's come on.
I feel for Moise Keane in particular, because he's going to have to play that backseat role, and it depends as well what happens with Mario Mandzukic. He's getting on the other side of 30 now. Do Juventus look to cash in on him? A guy who's been a fantastic servant of the club, who I think's done a great job. Obviously, they've still Gonzalo Higuain on their books as well, who they've already said is gone. There's no way he'll be at Juventus next season. So got a lot of these attacking players, but are they all going to be content with potentially taking a backward step, a back seat to Ronaldo and these other guys, and potentially play a role off the bench or have to change their game, depending on what sort of system Guardiola does bring, which we do believe will be very similar in a 4-3-3.
And now that we're opening Pandora's box, if Guardiola does come, he'll look to also potentially
bring some Man City
players. So, well, could that be the end of this Manchester City team that we're seeing now? And if so, what players would follow Guardiola to Juventus and who would fit in?
I don't think too many will leave. I think that they will probably target one of the defenders. I wouldn't be surprised if someone like an Aymeric Laporte is at least his name thrown up as someone who could potentially go there. I don't think that they will be seeing John Stones going there. I think that Laporte does meet what Juventus would probably want. I wouldn't be surprised if we see maybe a Gabriel Jesus potentially linked at one point. You would probably not even be surprised to always see someone like Kevin De Bruyne's name somehow come up. It probably is all going to be noise for some period of time. But I can't see him going on a massive cull and just bringing a whole load of Man City players, because at the end of the day, this is a tight-knit squad that would probably want to stay together. But there might be a couple he might at least look at and try and lure over. He might even look back at teams like Barcelona and potentially to Bayern Munich as well, at some of those players he worked with, and might potentially look to bring them over. If they've retired in some capacity, might look to bring them back in a coaching role. He might bring Mikel Arteta over with him as well as an assistant.
Who absolutely fascinating.
Who would be a fantastic assistant. Whether he still wants to be an assistant is a whole nother question, or whether he might take on a senior coaching role. So a lot of pieces of the puzzle have to come together. But I think Juventus are one team. They can have a very, very exciting offseason. I don't know whether it will happen with Guardiola, but if that definitely that Champions League ban does come through, he is going to probably potentially make that move. Guardiola and I think Sarri just underneath. I think Sarri will probably go if Guardiola doesn't go through. So it's a lot of different things that have to be weighed up here.
What happens if Guardiola does get the job at Juventus? What happens to the likes of Conte and the likes of
Sarri?
Well,
there's a lot of coaching opportunities opening up in Italy at the moment, Louise. It's an interesting time because I look at the top four or five teams. So if I look at these big clubs, right? So Napoli, Carlo Ancelotti will still be there next year. I believe Gasperini will still be at Atalanta. Inter maybe without Luciano Spalletti. So potentially Jose Mourinho and Antonio Conte will be looking there. Don't also have with Gennaro Gattuso next season at Milan. Maybe one of them could end up there. Claudio Ranieri isn't probably going to be at Roma for a long time. And Simone Inzaghi at Lazio could be on the way out. So you potentially have about four, five coaching vacancies opening up over the next little while. Some might look to go abroad to another country. But I do think that in particular, Inter and AC Milan and even the Roma, those three teams are all going to have new managers next season. And don't be surprised if we do see potentially Eusebio Di Francesco, Antonio Conte, and Jose Mourinho as some of those names that get thrown up, and even Maurizio Sarri if the Frank Lampard deal goes through.
That's if Jose Mourinho isn't already very comfortable and content with his pundit role now.
Well, I think Mourinho will want to get back in the coaching circle eventually. He might want to take a bit more time off. He's been off for about 6 or 7 months now, so he might look to just take a bit more time to make a decision and might not rush into it. But I believe that the Inter proposition of going back to where he won a Champions League could be something that we could look at a little bit later.
It's almost like Arsene Wenger, who's also having a bit of a sabbatical and merging into the punditry role.
He's another name that could be thrown up. I think that this is going to be an exciting time for managers on the move, potentially going to different clubs in Italy.
Do you think that you could ever see the great Zlatan Ibrahimovic joining Mourinho for a final stint at Inter?
Look, Louise, I don't think that Zlatan Ibrahimovic will be going back to Europe and playing in the Serie A. He's conquered it. He's done everything he can at Inter. He did everything he could at Milan and Juventus. I don't see him going back. He did say that if he was going to play for anyone, he would go back to Milan. I don't think that he will do that. I think he's quite content living in Hollywood at the moment in Los Angeles. I don't think he'll be changing that sort of lifestyle anytime soon. I think being under the bright lights over there, being arguably the biggest sporting athlete alongside LeBron James in Los Angeles at the moment, is probably the sort of lifestyle he'd like to live at the moment. So interesting to see what happens with that, but I don't think we'll be seeing Zlatan going to Inter.
More European chat in the final 15 minutes of the program. You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Louise Taffer with Nick DiBano. And we do have a pretty full show tonight.
Stacked show today.
We've got The Guardian's Jonathan Howcroft coming up in a couple of minutes. And we'll also be speaking to FFA's National Technical Director, Rob Sherman, at 5:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Something that I'm really looking forward to, Nick. I want to get a gauge as to where we're at and what his main priorities are on his list.
Well, Rob Sherman's a guy who's done it all. He was obviously technical director at Wales and New Zealand as well. So he has quite a pedigree, and also was just at the Melbourne Victory. His role at the Victory actually ends next week. So he'll be taking over within the FFA within the next week or so. So it'll be exciting to see when Rob does make that move. But I guess we'll get it all from him at around 5 5:30 we'll be getting Rob on the show. But Louise, it's time to move on to the Journo segment.
It is. Joining us now is The Guardian's Jonathan Howcroft. Jonathan, thank you for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Good to speak to you both again.
Yeah, likewise, Jonathan. And what a week it's been. I know you'll want to share your thoughts on the A-League Grand Final, so we might just touch on that before moving on to some of the latest news.
Yeah. Well, on the game itself, I mean, it was a bit of a damn squib, wasn't it? It was intense and very tactically well thought out from both coaches, but not a lot of spectacle for the people watching. Well done, Perth, for packing Opta Stadium. I told you last week that I'm naturally disinclined to moving games away from a team's natural home, but they totally justified it on that occasion. So well played to them. Credit to Sydney FC and in particular Steve Corica for what he's accomplished this season. Just goes to show what a good organisation can accomplish. Where I've spoken a lot on the show about how much we the burden of responsibility goes on individual coaches to change things season by season, but Sydney FC, Melbourne Victory, the clubs that consistently get it right behind the scenes, the rewards are there for all to see. If you want me to be a little bit controversial, I reckon I might be the second person in the country after Chris Griffith Jones who agrees with the VAR decision from Sunday night. I thought the whole system operated exactly as it was designed to. I didn't think there was enough margin for error for them to overturn the original decision. Now, the original decision is a different matter entirely. I thought the linesman should have kept his flag down, bearing in mind the protocols that we're now operating under, that if it's a potential goal-scoring situation, wait for the ball to go in and then have VAR chalk it off if it's a clear and obvious error. But actually, the VAR itself, I thought, was a perfectly fair application of that instrument. The reason that we've all got so hot under the collar is because of that yellow line that Fox Sports have produced. And this isn't a criticism of them in any way. It's a great visual aid. But if you actually look at the line itself, it's not directly on the angle that determines the offside. And even if it did, it's such a fractional call. It's baffled me since Sunday night and on Sunday night why people are so angry about it. To me, it's an extremely marginal decision that could have gone either way. And under the terms of use of VAR, for my mind, it wasn't crossing that threshold that determines a decision to be overruled. So I thought the right decision in that instance was made. But like I say, predicated on the linesman probably should have kept his flag down to begin with.
Yeah, Jonathan, we explored the idea of that on the show on Monday, and I posed the question, what if that Fox Sports line that we do see on TV is not actually straight? And when I did have a closer look at it, it wasn't. You could see, especially linking it up with the byline, that it was a bit
totally
off, right? So another aspect to the VAR decision is the VAR bunker, they don't actually have access to the broadcast footage. I think, from my knowledge, they actually have access to other types of angles and footage that we don't even see. So I would be fascinated to see what they see, because we obviously don't see that.
Yeah, well, 100%. And even if the ultimate outcome is that all of those replays showed that Michael Zulu was fractionally, by a half a boot onside, we're talking half a boot, one frame forward, one frame back. That we're either all in on video technology and we scrutinise every decision to that level of pixelated detail, or we accept that it's there to remove the clear and obvious error, which I think in this case it didn't have to do because it wasn't a clear and obvious error. So, I've been a bit disappointed with the reaction, to be honest. And in particular, the anger of the reaction immediately, I'm getting on a bit of a rant. And I was originally in favour of video technology when that original debate happened. But Simon Hill won me over pretty quickly. With his argument that we're getting it the wrong way around. We're missing the point of why we want VAR. The point why we want VAR is because we're unable to accept an incorrect decision. we need to be better at just allowing that occasionally people get things wrong. And in this instance, I don't think the assistant referee could have been right, conclusively right or wrong. It was just the timing of that incident was so, you know, all the bodies going one way, one player going the other, the timing that the ball's released, it was just one of those things that happens in football, and we just need to get better at accepting what that decision happens to be, whether it's for our team or against our team. All we've done now is we've introduced this next layer of deliberation, which, as objective as we want it to be, it is still subjective, and it just leads to further disagreement. So, I feel sorry for all the officials involved, because I thought, you know, they were in hindsight in a completely impossible situation, and I thought the process that they went through was ultimately the correct one.
And Jonathan, it's Nick here, and looking ahead, two of those players that did play in that grand final, Andrew Redmayne and Brandon O'Neill are among the names that have been thrown up to potentially be playing in the next Socceroos lot of game friendlies in June. What have you made of both of these call-ups? Do you think that they've been well-deserved?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I think Brandon O'Neill has had an outstanding season. And it's been interesting comparing him to Josh Brillante, who last season, I think, we all put Brillante ahead of O'Neill, and we saw him as the player perhaps with a greater upside on an international level. And he's been well and truly overtaken this year by Brandon O'Neill, who has shown a bit more going forward. He's shown a bit more leadership. He's maturing. He's still only a young footballer. And clearly he's somebody that Graham Arnold knows the capabilities of very well. So it feels like a seamless step up. And it's a position that I think that there is an opportunity at international level, something like O'Neill, to come from left field. We know that it's a position that's been occupied by senior players for a long period of time, but that door might be closing. Mark, you know, Miller Jednak, we know, is leaving the scene. Mark Milligan as well. So something like O'Neill, if he comes in, gets a couple of good games under his belt, he could be that number six for quite a long time. And Andrew Redmayne, he's absolutely deserved it over his time at Sydney SC. And you know, without being too reductive, it's a call for John Crawley as well, isn't it? I mean, he is the goalkeeper whisperer. The way he has transformed a whole series of Australian goalkeepers now is quite remarkable. And Redmayne deserved the Joe Master Medal on the weekend. It's a shame that voting had to occur when it did, because he was the single most decisive figure in that 120 minutes plus penalties. And it wasn't just that he saved those penalties. He looked, to my eyes, more likely to save those penalties than the Perth Glory attackers did of scoring them, which is a remarkable accomplishment. Another aspect about the Redmayne call-up as well, and you know, I'm going to jump back on a previous soapbox. He is the form goalkeeper in Australia at the moment. This time last year, we were talking about Lawrence Thomas being deserving of a call-up. It goes to show that when you've only got such a small number of teams in the domestic competition, in a position like goalkeeper, where there's only one of you per team, how vital it is that the system works effectively to provide that pathway for international selection. If one or two teams go down the foreign goalkeeper route, we've seen the success of Philip Curto this season as a good example. We need to be careful that we don't lose sight of how the pyramid is supposed to work. We need to have the likes of Andrew Redmayne coming through. I mean, he's probably in the middle of his career, but he's definitely no youngster coming through. We need to have a consistent supply throughout the professional system so that players like Redmayne can come through. Maybe he's not a 10-year international goalkeeper. Maybe he's only 2 or 3 years, but the opportunities are there for him to step into, because if you've only got 10 or 11 professional teams, there's only one goalkeeper in each team. It really does limit the options available to a national team coach.
It certainly does. And Jonathan, one goalkeeper who has certainly made the transition from A-League to European competition successfully is Socceroos goalkeeper Danny Vukovic, who has claimed the title in Belgium and also formidably kept the most clean sheets this season? 14 so far.
Just a wonderful story. And he's somebody, one of those players that left a mark on me really, really early in my time in football, just because he has the biggest handshake of anybody I've ever. I mean, gloves magnify it, don't they? But just squeezing his hand, because he's not that big a chap, but you shake his hands, it's like you know, the BFG, you know, a kid shaking hands with a giant or something. And just a great award for a fantastic professional. And we need players like Danny Vukovic showing the rest of the world that the highest level in Australian football is still good enough. You know, we don't have the high profile superstars that we had in the golden generation. So it's good that, you know, Danny Vukovic and Matt Ryan and one or two others are still flying the flag, showing that the best in Australia is as good as anything in the world.
And as we move into the next lot of international games, Jonathan, are there any other players that you would like to potentially see called up and get a chance in the international setup?
That's a good question. Off the top of my head, not specifically. I mean, the Brendan O'Neill would be, you know, would be the standout. I think I'd like to see, Jason Davidson and Ivan Franić have done enough to get around the squad. It depends. You know, I mean, Graham Arnold he's not going to call on that many European players, is he, for obvious reasons. Neil Kilkenny has had a very good season. If he, you know, he's nearer the end of his career than the start. There isn't really. I mean, the short answer to that is there aren't any Daniel Arzani type bolters that have really caught the eye in the latter stages of this season. The real exciting young prospects for me from this early season have been Kiwi as much as anything. It'd be Kakache and Singh from Wellington Phoenix. They'd be the players that I'd be excited to see at an international level.
And so, touching on the Socceroos, the squad is going to be announced tomorrow. Do you think that there will be any surprise selections?
Yeah, I think so. I think just by virtue of how Graham Arnold is going to play it, the suggestion is that he's going to let his European players have some time off. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see it. A few, maybe not necessarily unexpected. You know, they might have been around the squad in the past, or they might be familiar names, but perhaps not players that have been called up in recent times. Aaron Calver's a name that got thrown around recently, which you know, again, his form has been outstanding towards the second half of the season. But you'd like to think that the players that have put in a good A-League season, a consistent 20-plus games, you know, this is their opportunity to get rewarded.
And Jonathan, just one more question before we let you go. There's one player that obviously has been in and around the Socceroos circles for quite some time. That's Aaron Mooy. And he's going to be obviously subject to a lot of transfer rumours over the next little while, with Huddersfield being relegated from the Premier League. Are there any teams or leagues you'd like to see Aaron Mooy potentially make that move to? Because there's about five or six, I believe, Premier League clubs that are interested in his services.
Yeah, it's a really, really good question. And my instinct is to think he would flourish in a different league, because there aren't that many teams that necessarily in the English Premier League that play in a way that necessarily maximises his talents. And we know that he's probably going to be at the lower to middle end of that competition, where results are everything, particularly away from home. That way that would suit Aaron Mooy to get on the ball and have time and pick a pass, they're not going to play that way. So you'd suggest, okay, well, maybe a different, you know, somewhere like Holland or Belgium might suit him better. But what I would add to that is Aaron Mooy is a very specific type of character. He is quiet, he is reserved, he's got a young family, and he's settled. So I think there are certain players where you take it almost purely on a football basis or a developmental basis. With him, I would put so much more onus on what's best for him as a character and for his family and for his stability. And if they've built a base in Northern England, then my instinct would be to say, okay, well, where within, you know, I mean, Huddersfield is smack bang in the middle of the Pennine, so you could go west to the Manchester clubs or south towards the Midlands clubs without, you know, causing a great deal of disruption to his base. So that would probably be my logic. I would build it around what would allow him as a personality the most comfort.
Well, we'll have to watch this space. But Jonathan, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us again on Evenings on FNR. And we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you very much. Pleasure.
That was The Guardian's Jonathan Howcroft joining us there to recap the A-League Grand Final and chat about some of the other topics going on in the game, particularly transfer news, because it's that time of the season.
The silly season.
It is. And, you know, there is going to be movement for some of our Socceroos, especially the ones who we heard last night have been relegated in Saudi Arabia. And another one who's also, you know, on the fringe of potentially getting some game time, but not there. So there's many different narratives going on with our Socceroos and international players.
Yeah, well, I think looking ahead to obviously the Socceroos squad, and in particular, you look ahead at the players that are going to be playing in this next lot of friendlies, there'll be a few players that are looking for new clubs, Mark Milligan in particular as well. He's been released by Hibs, could potentially be back in the A-League. That's a big question whether he wants to come back. I know Ray Gatt's been almost publicly campaigning on Twitter to get into the Central Coast Mariners, which would be quite interesting. George Tomothu, sound that correctly from...
George Timotheo.
Timotheo from Schalke. I think he should potentially look for a move abroad if he's going to not get regular minutes at Schalke, because Schalke are a team with Champions League ambitions. They want to be high up in Bundesliga, and this season was a big disappointment for them. If he's not going to be getting those minutes, you've got to move out somewhere else, because he's a guy with an enormous future and be looking to get more minutes on the field. So I think he'd be a guy that maybe, if you're a championship kind of player and everything else, get him in.
But if he is... We saw him break into the Bundesliga at the weekend, which was just incredible. Canberra local, who's made his way to Germany. He missed out on a spot in the A-League with Sydney FC, whatever reason that was. But now he has paved his way to Germany and made his starting debut for Schalke in their nil-all draw against Stuttgart.
Yeah, well, obviously it is the end of the season. There might be that chance of just giving some of those fringe players an opportunity. It's obviously considering they didn't really have anything else to play for, no disrespect. But it'll be interesting to see whether they look to potentially integrate him into the first team set up a little bit more next season. I know Schalke, as we did say, very proud club, looking to do quite well in Bundesliga. So whether they're going to take the approach, be patient with George and give him that chance to potentially get into the team over a long period of time, or maybe look for instant success and bring in someone else and look to try and bolster the squad for a push back up into the Champions League positions next year.
And we are going to have a lot more Australians in the Bundesliga next season.
We sure will.
Because, well, we already have...
Matt Leckie, yeah.
Well, that's right. We already have former Melbourne Victory winger Christian Theoharis over there. He's not in the Bundesliga, but he's with a Bundesliga club.
Yeah, Mönchengladbach.
That's it. And... Perth Glory's young winger, Jacob Italiano. Oh, yeah. His deal is done and dusted with the Glory, and now he'll be on his way to Borussia Mönchengladbach as
well. Hopefully
get
a few more minutes next year. Wherever he's playing, maybe might get a loan spell even, and that would help him potentially get out in the park, which would be great.
Or even better, he could potentially slot into maybe the first team. We'll have to see
what
happens there.
That's going to be a big stretch, because no disrespect to Jacob, but Borussia Mönchengladbach being a team that are competing for Champions League and are right up there in Bundesliga, I don't necessarily seeing a young Jacob Italiano getting straight into the team straight away, but I do believe that if he's in and around the system, it'd be great for his development. Mm. But to get right in there, I think it's going to be very, very difficult. It'd be great, but when you've got a lot of talented players that Borussia Mönchengladbach have, looking at this team now that they've got, they'll be ahead of him, Torgan Hazard, Rafael, Josip Dermić, as well having Alassane play. Julio Villarreal, they got a whole range of great attacking players, in particular Torgan Hazard, who potentially could be on his way out, but it'll be tough for him. Mm. But I guess we'll wait and see, and hopefully maybe down the track, because he is still 16 years old, he's got a long way to go and an exciting football
17.
Career. 17. Still,
but yeah, you're
a
right,
long
he
way
does,
to go.
A very, very long way to go in his career. And as you say, if he is in amongst the first team, how great will that be for his development?
Get him a loan deal.
Because, well, even though... if he doesn't get a loan deal, even if he is training with the first team week in, week out, but not actually making the match day squad, that is still in itself a big development step.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, because then later on down the track throughout the season, you could see him come off the bench for a substitute appearance here and there and then maybe build on that like he did in the A-League.
He's part of a very professional environment at Borussia Mönchengladbach, a team that do demand success. We're only 3 points off a Champions League place this year. Fifth, they're going to be playing Europa League football. So it's a great environment to be a part of. So regardless of whether he makes it in the first team or not, he'll get an enormous and a fantastic amount of development being a part of that and a great internship which will allow for him then to eventually make that step up in the next few years, whether it's in the academy team or whether it's at a loan spell to maybe a second or third division German team or maybe somewhere else. Look, I hope he doesn't potentially, you know, when he gets to 19, he hasn't been playing much, come all the way back to the A-League like a lot of players do. I'd like for him just to stick it out for a bit. And then if anything, you make a transfer to another European club and maybe build your way around that. Because regardless, being a part of this system is going to be great for him. Let's hope that down the track we could see him playing regularly for Borussia Mönchengladbach once he matures and gets ready to go and has a fantastic little bit of time up there.
And knowing Jakey, I know that he will want to stick it out.
Yeah, of course. And another one of those German players, or players that are up playing in Germany, another Australian, is Brandon Borrello, which a player who's been forgotten, was very close to making it into the Socceroos World Cup squad in 2018. And he's at Freiburg, who are a Bundesliga club at the moment.
And they too showed their support for Sydney FC,
winning, taking
out the A-League.
Yeah, so Borrello obviously was at Kaiserslautern, then did his knee, and now he's at Freiburg at the moment. So a team in Bundesliga, and hopefully we can see him get integrated into the team next season once he's fully fit.
So now that we do have the Socceroos announcement tomorrow, 12:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, Graham Arnold will announce his squad for the upcoming friendly against Korea Republic in Korea. Nick, I have been saying since last year that Adam Taggart should be in that team.
Well, he's been playing well enough now.
He has been. I will be very surprised if he doesn't make the cut.
Well, you think that he should at least. I don't think there's been many other Australian strikers in nowhere near the same amount of form. I think Jamie McLaren will be the other one that will probably be there because of his form for Melbourne City. I think I've heard Craig Goodwin is actually going to be in the squad as well. I was just reading an article before we went on air that apparently he's been announced that he'll be a part of that system, which I think is great because I thought he had a good end to the season as well. And
a good end to the season, or do you
good
think
a season
good
in general?
Start.
But I think he started well, and he plateaued a little bit because the start to the season he had was exceptional, but he was consistent with just good performance at the end of the year, and I think he did enough to at least be part of it. Considering, you know, you got Robbie Cruz, who isn't necessarily banging doors down at Bochum, and he could be without another club, and there are other players that are in and out. Martin Boyle's obviously injured at the moment, who's also been another forgotten player. So I think it'd be good to see Craig Goodwin get a bit of a chance, whether he plays or not, or just being part of the system would be fantastic for him. It's hard to believe that Craig Goodwin will actually be 28 in December now as well. So for Craig Goodwin, it's almost now or never. He's getting towards that age where he's got to now make the inroads and get into that Socceroos system.
You touched on something you made a good point about before, is the fact that you don't want to see young players like Jacob Italiano have a go at Borussia Mönchengladbach and then come back to the A-League. And that's something that I've also been quite vocal about on FNR. I feel that the A-League is a safety net for Australian players.
It is a safety net, yeah.
And I feel like that they don't have the mental toughness to stick it out there and just wait and have patience to one day make it into the team, wherever it may be, right?
Yeah, that is very true, yeah.
What do you make of Craig Goodwin coming back to the A-League?
Well, it got to a point now, because I think it depends on how old you are. Craig Goodwin's now at his peak. This is probably as good as he's probably going to get, and potentially maybe a little bit more, because he's coming, going to hit that age when he gets to 30, he's going to be on the downhill slide. For Craig Goodwin making that move back to the A-League, I understand it. But if he was 19 years old or 21 years old, maybe even 23, I'd be a bit more critical of it. Because I think, considering he wasn't playing in Holland, I think that was a probably he came back to the A-League with the scope to come back and play at the Asian Cup, which he put in some fantastic performances and was very unlucky. For me personally, you've got to have, if you're between 17 and 23, I think, and you're there and you might not be getting as many minutes, you're stuck in the academy, you're stuck at loan spells, you've got to try and just get through it. You've got to try and get through that period and try and forge away, make a transfer to another European club. Don't necessarily have to come back to the A-League. But I think if you're about 25, 26, something similar to James Troisi did a while ago at the Melbourne Victory, which then allowed for him to go back after one season, that's a move that I can get around. But if you're young and you're just starting your career and you've just made that move, you've got to just try to stick it out for a little bit of time. As you did say, mental toughness is a big thing. And one thing I really hope that one player in particular I think of is when Daniel Arzani returns from his ACL. The one thing I don't want to see Arzani do is he comes back, he's in the Celtic setup because I believe it's a 2-year loan deal, so he'll be at Celtic next season. He comes back and he struggles to get into the Celtic team straight away. And then after 2 years, he's back at Man City and he's not playing, so he decides to go back to Melbourne City. I'd be very disappointed.
I can't see him
ever
going back to Melbourne City.
I'm talking about, obviously, hypotheticals here.
Yeah, no, but I understand what you're trying to say. I can't ever see him going back to Melbourne City. I think it will be very telling to see how he is when he comes back from his ACL, because we know injuries can go either way. I hear his rehab and recovery is going well. And it is on track.
Well, he'll have a full preseason as well, which is great. So he'll be right in amongst it by the time they start preseason in about a month or so time.
And look, I don't think that if things are going bad for him at Celtic, he will stay. We know that Manchester City would call him back if it's not the best case scenario for him.
Then it's going to mean hopefully he would stick it out and go to another club, potentially like a championship team, and get some minutes.
Well, if Manchester City do call him back, he'd be back on loan to another club.
Oh, I hope so. And to be honest, I think that him being at Celtic, I think that he should be pushing for more minutes at Celtic, because as much as Celtic win the SPL every season, I think it's a team he could break into. I'm saying what we've seen from him and his development is that this guy is good enough. And the Celtic have some great players, don't get me wrong. James Forrest, Callum McGregor, Scott Sinclair. These are storied, they're experienced guys that have played in the SPL and at the top level of European football for quite some time. But I feel like Daniel Arzani could push them out.
What do you make of Brendan Rodgers? We know that he is at Leicester City.
Yes.
I said, again, a couple of months ago that I could see Tom Rogic making his way to Leicester.
Well,
what do you think? Maybe, I'm not quite sure how good his relationship is with Daniel Arzani, but regardless, could you see maybe Arzani going to a lower tier club in the Prem?
I would love to see him go to the Champions. I know that the Championship is a very physical league. I know the Prem's a very physical league. I don't know if a lower tier Prem would take the punt on him if he hasn't had the minutes in the SPL, but I think a Championship team definitely would. I look at Leicester, so we'll get back to Arzani in a second, but Leicester, Tom Rogic going into that team would be very interesting because they've got a whole range of attacking players that are able to break games open. One in particular, a very young attacking player called James Maddison, who I absolutely love watching. He's a guy that will be playing for England very soon and he's already started getting call-ups here and there. I think that when you've got that team and Tom Rogic comes into that and they potentially build a team around Maddison, they have also the experience of Mark Albrighton. You've got a guy like Barnes as well, and you've even got Yuri Tillemans in behind you. That team would be very, very solid. So don't be surprised if Rogic goes, potentially Rogers might decide to look at getting Rogic across there. So that's something to keep an eye on over the offseason. And then obviously Daniel Arzani. If he goes to the Championship, I know that I'd take him at Wigan. Definitely would take him at Wigan.
Even though Wigan,
we don't usually talk too much about their playing stocks, but they don't necessarily need an attacking midfielder. But if there ever was the chance for him to come to Wigan, I definitely would say, yep, get him in, because I think that he would be a player that would fit in quite well there, because there's been a bit of a history. This is actually something that I applaud Wigan very well with, actually getting loan players in. They give them opportunities, and a lot of them made big springboards and have actually been able to forge very solid careers. And considering that they're about to lose Nick Powell, who's about to potentially head to Stoke City, there is a potential position opening up. So if Daniel Arzani is listening, I hope that maybe a Wigan Athletic official might be somewhere out there listening and looking out for Daniel Arzani. Maybe look at it down the track if he's not getting minutes at Celtic.
Maybe that's your future job, football operations at Wigan.
Probably won't be happening anyways. But look, if Daniel Arzani could make his way down there. Also, just want to apologise. We weren't able to get Rob Sherman on the line today, but we'll try and get him on in the next coming days as we get closer towards his appointment at the FFA.
Yes. And before we move on from the Socceroos discussion, because it is quite interesting at the moment, Jonathan Howcroft said that we won't see many of the core group of players that we usually see because it is that off-season for them. They're going to have a bit of a break.
It's one friendly, you know, might give some of those A-League guys an opportunity.
Who else do you think might be called into the squad, which will be named tomorrow?
Tough question. I saw someone throw up the name Isaias.
Isaias?
I don't think that they will call him up, but someone said, why not Isaias?
Okay.
So just potentially throwing it out there. That's one name. I don't think he will, but I think it's someone you can definitely just keep an eye on. I think that he's someone to potentially look at.
Do you think in terms of younger players, we might see a Denis Genreau, even though he hasn't had many minutes in this past back end of the season?
I wouldn't be shocked. I think that he would definitely be considered. I think that he may find himself in the team. It really depends on how many players are going to sit this period out and how many players he'll want to look at. Probably see a lot of A-League players, though.
Maybe a Riley McGree?
Riley McGree, yeah. Yeah, I think Riley McGree might get a look in. I think if we're looking at A-League clubs, Chris Economides will definitely be there. I think that his season's been spectacular. I wouldn't be surprised if one of those Perth fullbacks find their way in Davidson or Franjic. I think Davidson more likely, as much as the right-back position is a little bit... The depth isn't as great as what the left-hand side is. It might give like an Aziz Baich the time off, or potentially it'll just goes back in Davidson, or maybe just Davidson. Thomas Deng potentially is another one as well to potentially keep an eye on.
Alex Gersbach is enjoying his off-season in Barcelona at the moment, touring around.
Might run into
Frankie De Jong.
Yeah, potentially. And Alexander Susniak could potentially be looked at. He's still playing in the K-League at the moment, so another guy to keep an eye on. So there'll be a few guys that will be thrown up and about, but I think that we may see some shocks. I don't know exactly who I could see from the A-League. Maybe a Steven Yagarkovic could potentially be looked at. I know he's a big... Josh Parrish loves Steven Yagarkovic. You can talk about him all day, literally. And even like you probably see a lot of those younger guys that are already being called up, your Mustafa Ramanis, Owen Mabil, as I did say, Alex Gersbach.
Awa has had a fantastic season overseas.
Absolutely unreal season over in Denmark. And I tell you, he's had a breakout season, not just at the club level, but for the Socceroos as well, finishing second in the Danish Super League, I believe it is, with Midtjylland. So it'll be interesting to see what happens for him next. But Louise, I believe now it's time to get to our Euro discussion once again.
It is, but before we get there, well, actually, a nice segue, yes. We've touched on the Socceroos, but now it's just time for the Matildas. Because they are currently in camp in Turkey at the moment, and Ante Milicic has seen more of his team start to trickle through and arrive in Turkey. But we actually heard from Tegan Micah today about her call up to Australia's squad. Her reaction went viral. I don't know if you saw, Nick.
No, I didn't see it just yet, Louise. We've our producer just getting that any second now. I'll be able to...
There was a video that was circulating around Twitter, and she received the phone call, and you could just see how much it meant to her. Because we touch on the fact that players all dream of representing their country at, you know, the top level and going to a FIFA World Cup. So, you know, you can only understand how much it would have mean to her to actually receive a call-up for the World Cup.
And if you missed it, here it is.
This is definitely the best moment of my career so far. It's a pinnacle. Obviously, we dream of it being little girls, so definitely the best achievement so far. Very surprised. Obviously, have quite a big following over there in the college system and UCLA itself. So that was just a very surreal moment for me, and I think inspire a lot of other young girls coming through that, you know, it can happen. It can happen to you. Very good. Obviously, still trying to get out a little bit of that jet lag, just get the legs moving a little bit. But yeah, very good, very positive and solid. Yeah, absolutely. I'm just trying to be a sponge, just soak up as much information as possible from them and just see how they hold themselves. And obviously, they're both very good professional athletes, so it's a very good learning opportunity for me.
That is Matilda's goalkeeper, Tegan Micah, chatting about her call-up, saying this is definitely the best moment of my career so far. We dream of it as little girls, so it would be the best achievement to date.
Yeah, it's unbelievable news if you're ever going to get called up to a World Cup team, whether you play or not. It's a whole other question, but just being a part of it, I think, would be absolutely surreal. And hopefully she has a bright future, a part of the Socceroos, I believe behind Lydia Williams as well in the pecking order. Matilda, sorry. It's been a long day, Louise.
That's all right.
But Matilda's, we're talking Socceroos, Matilda's sometimes just have a bit of a brain fart. But when it comes to that, Tegan Micah in particular, in behind Lydia Williams in the pecking order for the Matilda's goalkeeping positions. And potentially once Williams gets a little bit older, might decide to move on from the international stage, Micah could slot in. Never know. Maybe Micah could be a bit of a shock and could potentially play during the World Cup.
Well, potentially. We'll have to see what Ante Milicic does with the squad heading into this last FIFA Women's World Cup pre-tournament friendly against the Netherlands, which is on June 1st, only a week and a half away.
We're getting closer now to the World Cup. It's actually crept up. It was only a few weeks ago and I was thinking, oh, you know, Women's World Cup's coming up. It's still another month or so away. That's only a couple of weeks. It was like last year with the Russia World Cup. It just came out of nowhere. Season ends and then straight into the World Cup, which I think is absolutely fantastic.
It is. It certainly gives us a lot to talk about. But before we move on from the Matildas, the BBC has announced the winner of their annual award. It's called Women's Footballer of the Year 2019. And Sam Kerr was in the running for it. Unfortunately, she didn't take it out. She fell short to Lyon striker Ada Hegerberg, who was voted Women's Footballer of the Year
and
by the
Pernille
BBC.
And Pernille Harder as well. So you got two fantastic Danish footballers who are just finishing ahead. So Denmark have got two of the best, and we're just in behind. I'd love to see Sam Kerr potentially have a big game in that Women's World Cup, potentially get the Golden Ball at the World Cup. That would be something that would trump that.
Wouldn't it?
I think it'd be absolutely unreal. But Louise,
I think Kerr is set to have a pretty.
I think she's going to have a. I remember I saw some tweet about when she was talking in the US and how she said, "When you see me next, I'm going to have the Women's World Cup trophy. I'm going to have a Women's World Cup medal." It goes to show the person she is and sort of the winning mentality she's got, that she wants to go out there and get the job done. So I'll be excited to see what Sam Kerr can bring back. It's a very exciting time now as we get closer towards that World Cup, and Sam Kerr in particular is going to lead the charge. And if anyone's going to be that X factor, it is Miss Kerr, and I reckon she could be the person to get the job done.
And Ada Hegerberg won't be there at the FIFA
Women's
World
Cup.
But her profile publicly has risen quite a lot over the past year, thanks to her being the first recipient of the FIFA Ballon d'Or Award for Women, which is pretty amazing. But she has maintained her amazing form this season with Lyon, 29 goals in 33 games. And also came home with the treble. You can't really argue with that.
And there's a big game, that Champions League final too.
Yeah.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Just incredible.
Yeah, so just quickly touching on before we go all the way to Europe tonight is Melbourne Victory's last Asian Champions League game, last game of the season, the last game for Kevin Muscat, Carl Valeri and Keisuke Honda, who all will finish up at the end of tonight. It will be an emotional game for Kevin Muscat in particular because he's been at the club for 15 years. I believe it's ticking on to now as a player and the coach. So we wish him all the best in his future endeavours, and Keisuke Honda, who has said himself, it's been a great time here in Melbourne, but it'll be interesting to see where Keisuke ends up next. He's an enigmatic footballer who has a lot of other business ventures, see him hanging out with Will Smith over in Hollywood as well. Who knows where we'll see Keisuke next, potentially in the MLS. He could be heading over there and potentially joining Zlatan over in Los Angeles. You never know. So, and also Carl Valeri, who will make a move now into the next stage of his career, next stage of his life after football, as maybe a coach or maybe something else. Might even play part-time in the NPL. We'll just have to wait and see.
Oh, you'd love that, wouldn't you?
I'd love to see Carl Valeri play in the NPL. I reckon it'd be great. More of those A-League legends playing out on a Sunday down at the local grounds. I reckon it'd be absolutely fantastic.
And touching on the Asian Champions League and wrapping up last night's action, Sydney FC lost 4-0 to Japan's Kawasaki Frontale, but it was a second-string team. It was great to see a lot of young, fresh faces running out there. And it was only 48 hours after the A-League boys hoisted the trophy, so you would understand that none of them would be playing.
They're just happy to celebrate at the moment. I think that those players just play as a great bit of experience for them, Yuri Vanoviches, etc. I think it was absolutely great for them, just some of those fringe players.
I read that apparently Ryan Grant has had 8 minutes sleep over the past 3 days.
And I'm not even surprised. I am not shocked whatsoever that he's had only 8 minutes of sleep. Just look at the guy. Look at that mullet. He'd be out celebrating, hitting the town over in Sydney, and I'm sure he'd be loving every second of it at the moment.
And wouldn't that give you more incentive? Like, if you were bunking with Ryan Grant, wouldn't you
be sleeping.
Get the scissors out and...
Nah. You let the man celebrate. That's a nice mullet. You let the man celebrate,
Louise.
I hope
you don't come into the studio with a mullet one day.
I don't know about that. Maybe potentially when I get my next haircut booked in, I might see myself coming out with a mullet. But anyways, Louise, look.
You wouldn't be disloyal on your fade. But before we move on from Sydney FC, just want to also congratulate two of the former FFA Centre of Excellence players who were teammates. Joel King and Patrick Shabilio, who made their debuts for Sydney FC last night in the Asian Champions
League.
Let's
hope for a big future for the both of them. Obviously, Sydney FC might have a bit of a clean out at the end of the season, as most A-League clubs do. Potentially some players come to the end of their tenures, one in particular, Alex Brosk, maybe some others, and potentially opens up the door for some of those young players in particular as well, the returning Trent Bahagia next season. So exciting times for the Sky Blues heading into next year and looking to defend their crown.
That's exactly right. Moving on to Europe.
What do you got for me, Louise?
Oh, there's a little bit of news going around. Did you see that Christian Pulisic signed for Chelsea?
Well, yes, he officially made his move today. Obviously, he was signed in January, but the loan deal that he had with Borussia Dortmund ended, so he's been unveiled at the Stamford Bridge, which is great to see. I think that with their transfer ban, he's going to add something to this team next season. If they do lose Eden Hazard, he'll be able to somewhat fill the gap, but in particular, it's going to be very difficult because Hazard is arguably in the top five, top 10 best players in the world. But Pulisic has a big future ahead of him. I love the statement. He wants to try and take away the stereotype of him being American, because we don't necessarily, we don't put American and football in that same sentence and think that they'd produce. It's similar to what we've got here in Australia, that there's all that stereotype that they're not European. It's a bit different.
There's competing codes.
Yeah, and obviously with Christian Pulisic, he's very similar to a former player called Landon Donovan that was almost the figurehead. But difference is Pulisic is actually playing overseas while Donovan played a lot of football at the MLS. So Pulisic, for me, I think is going to be an absolute talent for them. Let's hope for a big future. I think Chelsea in particular, they're coming to that Europa League final at the moment. I thought it was very, very silly of them to even be playing friendlies before that Europa League finals. As we did say, they are without Ruben Loftus-Cheek. So big times now for Chelsea because I want to win that Europa League. It could be the last game of Maurizio Sarri. A few of the players could be on their way out. Transfer ban upcoming. A few things need to fall into place for them at the moment, but they'd be looking to get the job done this week.
And Arsenal are without Henrik Mkhitaryan.
Very, very disappointing to hear that news.
Yes.
Absolutely shocking.
Before we go on from Pulisic, did you know he's actually the most expensive US player of all time?
No now. Real surprise, in my opinion. Obviously, the US, we did say, haven't.
He's only 20.
Yeah, and he's got a massive future ahead of him, and he's going to be an absolute superstar by the time he matures and gets himself to a level where he can really play a big part of this Chelsea team, and I think could be as soon as next season.
So, Chelsea are taking on Arsenal. How do you think that game will go?
It's hard to say. They had very interesting seasons, but the one thing that I think that Arsenal have is that Unai Emery is the Europa League master. He knows how to get the job done, did it with Sevilla so many times. I think Arsenal are going to win it. I think Chelsea will come close. It's going to be a very, very close contest, but I think Arsenal are going to win the Europa League just because of the Emery factor. He knows how to get it done in the Europa League. Chelsea in particular, they scraped in, whilst Arsenal were very much clinical and were able to just smash their way past Valencia, who are also quite a solid team and they're no slouch. So it'd be good to see a really exciting final. I think the only disappointing thing is 6,000 tickets only given to fans of Chelsea and Arsenal in Azerbaijan, which I think is just shocking because I think that you should be allowing as many fans of those teams to come to these games and fill out the crowd in the big 70,000-seat stadium over in Baku. And now Henrik Mkhitaryan misses his opportunity to potentially hoist up some silverware. So, obviously, it's very political. I don't really want to get too much into that. But it's be exciting to see, obviously, how this game still plays out. But I guess Arsenal just need to try and adjust as best they can. They've still got guys like Mesut Ozil, Alexander Lacazette, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who can get the job done for them. But that game is still, I believe, about a week and a half away. So
Next Thursday.
We're getting quite close to that game now. So, it'll be interesting to see whether Arsenal can potentially adjust that. Mkhitaryan's been in and out of the team this year. So,
but it's also going to be right. Interesting to see what and where the clubs are at, because we know that the EPL season's now finished. How do they stay motivated? Oh, we've got one more game left.
It's a cup final, yeah. I think that's the big thing, but it's a lot of time between. That's why I think
it is, isn't it?
Maybe Chelsea had the fruit of thoughts to play that friendly and keep the match fitness up. But at the same time, though, to train for just 2 weeks and you're just waiting and waiting, it's like it's a long international break. So as we head into what next week is going to be, arguably the biggest few games, I think, of the season, with the Champions League, Europa League and Championship playoff final all in the same week. And just before we go, Louise, on the weekend as well, because I know that we won't get too much of a chance to speak about it on Friday, is that the Serie A wraps up as well this weekend. And I don't know if you've seen the table, Louise, but there are four teams battling for two spots: Atalanta, Inter, Milan and Roma. It is very exciting. And let me just quickly run through these fixtures these sides have got and the permutations for them all. So Atalanta, they take on Sassuolo on Monday morning at 4:30 a.m. You got Inter against Empoli, Spal versus Milan, and Roma taking on Parma. All these games happening at 4:30 a.m. on Monday morning. Now, it's very, very complicated, basically, because if one of Atalanta or Inter slip up, they're basically, if Milan win, Milan are straight in. So basically, the margin for error is tiny. And if I'm going to go as a prediction, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I want this to be remembered, Inter aren't going to be making the Champions League this year. They got smacked by Napoli on the weekend. They're taking on Empoli, who are battling for their lives down at the bottom of the table. They're also they're just 1 point outside the bottom three. They've won their last three games. Beat Torino 4-1. I'm saying they're going to take a point off Inter, and Milan are going to slide in and just get in. Atalanta are going to historically be in their first Champions League, and Milan are just going to make it, while Roma will fall agonisingly short.
Well, there you go. I'm going for Atalanta. I hope they do secure their spot for next season.
They were very good against Juve on Monday, but they were just unlucky, weren't able to get the job done. But I think that Milan, this is their time to return to the Champions League, and they're going to get it at the expense of Inter, who are just going to fall to an Empoli team who just are motivated to stay up. And you know, when those teams, they're battling relegation, anything could happen, and it's almost the stakes are even higher than what it is for these teams up the top.
Well said. Well, enjoy the action, Nick, and thank you for your company here in the studio. That's all we've got time for today. But if you miss any of the show, head to FNR's website or FNR's SoundCloud. I'm Louise Taffer with Nick DiBarno. Bye for now.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.